This is Wyman and Bob
on Seattle Sports Station, powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Pete Carroll press conference coming your way in a matter of moments. We'll send you out to the Virginia Mason Athletic Center as soon as Pete steps up to the mic, and presumably will give us some updates on the health of this team, Dave. See what's going on with Ken Walker, if he's got any more information. DJ Dallas, what are you laughing at?
I don't know. Some of these texters sometimes just really crack me up. 425, and I don't think this at all, but he just texts in, Sanchez is an idiot. just struck me funny, but I like Mark Sanchez. I think he does a really good job.
Yeah, he may be a guest on this program at some point, so let's be nice to him.
Yeah, come on, 425. What's the matter with you? I don't know. That just got to me.
Yeah, and I didn't hear, like I said, I tend to just tune out the commentators unless they're phenomenal or they stink. And I certainly don't think he stinks, so I didn't really hear Bobby just wanted it more.
I didn't. I guess that's kind of what it looked like, but I don't think he wanted it more, obviously. But yeah, I just thought it was more of a veteran move by Bobby.
Yeah.
You know, he knew that if he fought for it, he might get a chance there, and got them to call it for whatever reason. Usually it's so much more slanted towards the offense than the defense.
Okay. Yeah. I didn't hear what he said there, and I didn't, you know, I'm not going to call the guy an idiot because I think he's trying to, you know, give some praise to a guy that looked like he came up with a kind of a hustle play or something, and, yeah, you know, whatever. But the officiating's been a little questionable the past couple of weeks. That's all I'll say. And I'm guessing it's probably not isolated to just Seahawks games. It happens in every game, and, you know, it's obviously very, very, it's a tough thing. You know, we see it at full speed on the field. It's easy to screw. It's amazing, much like baseball umps and first, you know, the guy at first base, guy at third base, just how often they're right. How often they're right on a call. And you see it at such fast speed, and then you see it in super slow motion. I tend to give these guys a break. But when it's being reviewed in New York and you have the time to sit there and really pick it apart, if you will, and see what appears to be obvious, that's when it gets confusing. It makes me feel like, okay, well, maybe I just don't understand what a catch is. Or maybe I don't understand what an interception is.
Yeah. Well, and I think that frustrates a lot of people who have been watching football for a long time. Like, you know, it's just like it assaults your senses. Like, I've been watching this game for a long time. I know what a catch is. I know what an interception is, you know. And then they break it down. And like I said, I think they have all of these rules that they go through. Like, okay, let's write it down on a piece of paper. And then there's, you know, the guy that we used to, you know, mention this on the show. Somebody did anyway, about the two guys sitting in a bar in Omaha and, you know, just ask them, Joe and Fred or whatever. Mm-hmm. And everybody, you know, I think for the most part, I don't know that there's anybody aside from like the most ardent Rams fan or Bobby Wagner fan that wouldn't call that, you know, or that would call that an interception. I just don't think anybody would. Common sense.
Yeah.
Sense that ain't so common.
Yeah, that was one where I'm just looking at going, I don't understand the call. I don't know what's going on here, but okay. You know, they were able to overcome it. They won the game, and that's in the end all that matters. But yeah, that was really bugging me, Dave. That was really bugging me.
I don't blame you.
And we didn't harp on last week. The only thing I really harped on about those calls last week was the amount of time it took to come up with what they felt was a conclusion to the call. Like, you really took, what was it, 7 minutes, 6 minutes in total? You had to look at a play. If you have to look at any play that long, then the play on the field should be the call.
Yes.
Right? If you can't identify it within the first 90 seconds, you know, after you've gone through all of your angles, then you go with the play on the call on the field. That should be the default. Like, hey, there should be a buzzer or a big hand that comes out and smacks him in the face. So, time's up. What's your conclusion? You can't figure it out? All right, then the call on the field stands, whatever that is.
You think underneath the hood there should be like one of those boxing gloves that's on a spring?
Punches them right in the nose. Time's up. Whatever the call on the field was, that's what stands, good or bad.
If you look at it for more than 2 minutes, you get punched in the face.
Yeah, because that tells me you're trying to find something else. If you have to make that much effort to come up with something that's counter to what was called on the field, it's really going against the spirit of, hey, we need to get these things right. We need to get those obvious, you know, inbounds, out of bounds, had possession, didn't have possession, fumble, no fumble, whatever the call is. It goes against the whole spirit of what the replay's there for. It's not to let me find, here's this one little sliver of grass I can see here, and it looks like it could have been out of bounds, or it could have been loss of possession, whatever. If you have to try that hard, to me, that's going against what you're supposed to be doing there.
You know, it's funny. The NFL replay booth, I believe, was next to ours, and I saw the guy walk in there, and he was all dressed up in a suit and everything. And I was like, you know, wondering what was going to go on there. And I don't know exactly, because they talked to New York, right? And I don't want to give the officials too hard of a time. I think it's more about the people back in New York that have like all of these rules. But there's a guy named Kirk Dornan that we've had on the show before. I think you were out last year, 2 years ago, I think it was, Bob. And I had this guy come on. He was an NFL official for like 23 years, and we've gotten to be buddies. And like I said, I love those guys. They're such good dudes. They love the game. And I always say hi to the guys down there, man. I, you know, have conversations with them. They're just good, solid guys. I always felt like they were there to help. It's just more about, I feel sorry for them because, number one, they're being asked to implement some of these penalties and things that I don't think make sense, and it's not on them. You know, like the helmet-to-helmet thing, man, it's just that's a common sense thing that really bothers me, that you see somebody go in there with a shoulder, you hit with a shoulder and you don't hit with your head, it's a miracle. Like, yeah. Your head is 6-7 inches away from the end of your shoulder. You know, it's by chance that you don't get your head in there. And so I think they're asked to do a lot of things that they think are kind of ridiculous, but hey, we have to do it. So then you get mad at the official. Well, I think it's more about the way the rules are being made. Maybe I'll text Kirk. I know he lives down here part of the year, but just about that process and what they go through, because, you know, like I said, I always tend to side with those guys personally, but some of the rules that are coming from the NFL, you know, especially, Bob, I'm going on my own little rant here, but
that's all right. We're waiting for Pete.
Yeah, especially when it's about making the game safe. It is inherently an unsafe game. It just is. There. I mean, look, I'm not saying that you should have, you know, the wedge back and guys, you know, going head to head and blowing each other up and getting neck injuries and everything like that, but you know, when you there's some things that you can't control. You know, if something is okay, let's go to Pete and I'll be done.
It's you know, so there's some strained tissue in there, but it's not an ankle sprain. It's not a high ankle sprain. It's not a lateral ankle sprain like we normally report on. It's different than that.
Okay. And then, how did you feel your cornerbacks played yesterday, and how did Trey look when he rotated in?
The guys did okay. We missed a couple opportunities on some stuff, but all in all, they played good, solid football, and they were close on a couple routes and made some plays. You know, I thought Woolen did a nice job. You know, late in that big play, late in the game, you know, and knocked the ball down really cleanly. Unfortunately for Trey's play that he got penalized on, it was great coverage. He was all over it. He just got there a hair early. But there's a couple things in there that happened that we got to get better at, for sure.
Bob. You're muted, Bob.
Just keep going, Bob. Nobody tell him.
While Bob works out the technical difficulties, let's go with Brady for 7.
Nice talking to you, Bob.
That's a tough one to follow. You guys have a chance to make the playoffs and end up with a very high pick in next year's draft, which is pretty uncommon historically. I'm wondering how closely you're following the Broncos in their season, knowing that you're going to end up with that first round pick and second round pick.
No, well, everybody else is following that one. I know that they're having a hard time of it right now, and that, you know, that helps our number go up the board here. But it's not a real topical thing here right now.
And with Neil, did you say he's got a chance to get back this week? He feels like that.
Yeah.
Thank you,
Curtis.
Yeah, Pete, I know you said this morning you felt like the defense had made strides after the first couple drives there. Was that more so like in the running game or the throwing game where you guys made the biggest kind of shift with the way you started handling things?
We played better across the board. You know, they didn't throw for a lot of yards in this game, and they were able to run the ball. They mixed their style of runs, you know, with the perimeter stuff that really kind of pecked away at us. QB keeping the ball on the boots, and their fly plays, you know, a little bit that kind of stuff. But in general, I thought we just played more solid football. The first two drives didn't feel very very much in control of it, but after that, we were able to slow it down. We had the one drive late in the game, but other than that, I think they scored a touchdown in one of the last eight drives or something like that. So we just played better.
And what did you see from the run defense? The numbers said 170 yards allowed, but how'd you kind of see that group? Did you feel like you made any strides on that front this week?
Yeah, the running backs were like 3.5 a carry, you know, so that part of it. But like I said, the auxiliary runs, they had some, they made some yards there. And I thought that we just played better. The guys played hard the whole time. You know, we got out of there stopping them on third down, you know, better than we had. All of that added to it.
Masvita.
Yep. Hey, Pete, going back to this morning, you said that on the radio that Gino was kind of a hothead, but you said it's important for a quarterback to kind of have that edge.
Did I say hothead?
I believe so, but I'll say something to that extent.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, he's a fierce competitor, and he battles, you know, and then his first reaction is to come out swinging. And I love it about him. It's why all during the time that he was here, when he wasn't getting a chance to play, he was always still in it. He was always looking for the opportunity, or he'd make a throw in practice, and he was battling, and he found a way to continue to grow during that time. That's internally driven motivation. You know, we did the best we could with him, but he was on it, and so I mean, I love every bit of that about him, and so do our guys.
John?
That was the first we've seen of Tease on defense for you guys out of safety. Just what did you think of the way he
did a good job. He was in good position, and we felt good about a couple things that he took away, and a couple he didn't get a chance to make a big play or anything, but he did. He fit the routes up well and did a nice job on the back end. He did good. He had a really good week of practice, and that's why when Josh was sick all week long, you know, we really drilled him to see if he would be ready to play. We felt good about it, so that's why he got a chance.
Greg?
You mentioned this morning that you think you have a shot to do something really special this season. What do you mean? What gives you that belief?
We got to win some games. If we keep winning games, we'll be okay. We'll have a shot at it. We have... we have some of the elements that you need that we're fortunate. We have leadership. We got quarterback play. We've got a style about us. We've got kicking game. We've got a lot of things that are really positive about this team. But it doesn't matter. Well, that's just a bunch of gibberish unless we, you know, win some games. And so we have to try to win out and win them one at a time and see what happens.
About that kicking game, we haven't talked much about it, but I think Jason Myers is 22 of 23 now. How does that change your strategy, knowing you can almost bank on 3 points beyond a certain yard line?
Yeah. Well, you know, we've been feeling. I mean, it's not a change in strategy for us. You know, in that we've had Jason for seems like 3 years now, and he's a great kicker. And so when we have to, or when we need it, we go. You know, I don't want to force him to kick him. You know, longer. He's had a couple. Did he have 58s? Is that what they were? 56s or something, you know, he had a couple 56s or something one game. He can kick the ball from 60 yards out, so we know that. It gives us the confidence that when we're across the 50, we got a chance to, you know, to make some points. You know, Michael's doing a heck of a job, too. The punt team's one of the highest-rated punt teams, you know, in terms of net punt, so we know we've got a really good 1-2 punch with those guys, and that adds to our confidence and field position and all that kind of stuff.
What I was thinking about was yesterday in L.A. and that final drive. Once you got inside the 40, you know, I guess the fans were telling that on the TV, they were saying, why don't you just lay up and play for the field goal? Does it, because Myers is, I don't want to say automatic, but you can bank on him making the three there, can you be more aggressive in approach and play call knowing you may have three in the back pocket.
Yeah, we were not playing for the field goal at all. We wanted to get in field goal range so that we had. I mean, we say it's, you know, field goal to tie, touchdown to win. You know, we're talking that way as our 2 minute jargon goes. But that wasn't the focus. You know, and thrilled when we made the first down that got us in there, the big play to Marquise. You know, and we were down in deep and we were in great shape. So now it's all about scoring a touchdown. That's really, we were driving for a touchdown was what our thought was.
Brady?
Pete, what is like schematically the idea behind an unbalanced line? And what happened on the play where you guys went with that and then Geno lost the fumble? What do you, as he was throwing?
Yeah, it's just you try to get an edge, you know, by they don't line up right, they don't see it right, maybe they get confused and you can take advantage of it. You know, that's basically what it is. Sometimes if you've seen people against other teams in unbalance, and you can see how they adjust, and so we felt we had a little something there, but we didn't pass pro right properly, and we got beat on it, and so it didn't work out.
Corbin?
Pete, I know obviously he wouldn't be an option right now, but Rashad Penny said yesterday that he thinks he's got a chance to be back if you guys make the playoffs. Do you see that being realistic right now, and where is he at in his recovery?
Well, you got to love his optimism. He hasn't run yet, you know, so who knows, you know, all right, let me go with that one. Who knows what's going to happen, but he's still a ways from getting back. But I love that he felt really good about the process that he's in right now, and that's a good sign.
Is he rehabbing down in California, Pete?
Yes.
Okay.
Bob? Bob?
Hey, Bob, what's happening?
All right, thank you, everyone.
Okay, see ya.
Is that really it? They shut it down on Bob?
Bob couldn't get it figured out.
What's going on with him?
I don't know, man. You know, I hung out with Bob on the road. He's, yeah. You know, he's our guy, man. I don't know. He's our go-to guy.
I love this. Two times in a row, Bob, he's probably there talking and doesn't realize he's muted.
He's got his crazy hair going everywhere.
He's got the Doc Brown do going.
Yeah. No, I hung out with him and his girlfriend on Saturday night. He's good dude, but didn't get a chance to talk. I had not heard that about Rashad Penny. I didn't think it was even close. I didn't think there was any chance that he was going to get back. So, you know, like Pete said, he's not even running yet. So
yeah.
We'll see. Well,
there are five games left. If he's not even running yet, I mean, what's the reality there? What's a fair expectation to him?
Yeah. A couple of things there. He said, you know, there were some missed opportunities at corner. I thought that there was a reason why they put Trey Brown in. That first drive, I thought Michael Jackson, he did not pick up, some of the receivers that were going into his zone. And so that happened. The guy that first drive, which was particularly annoying to me, I was in a bad mood during the entire part of that broadcast. Bruce Irvin had a rough go, really rough go. He had four plays where he could have done a lot better. So, and I almost thought, like, man, why don't you get Boye in there, get Mafe out there? I wouldn't put Daryl Taylor in. Daryl Taylor had that beautiful sack on that stunt that he ran, but he's just not an every down guy.
Yeah.
But Bruce, I was disappointed in that because, like, on the, you know, I have my notes here. I was just writing down, but there was one play where on a fly sweep that he got too much of the blocker. You can't go right down the middle of the blocker. You've got to be able to get like the edge on him and turn it back in. And he didn't do that on one of the plays. And then he got turned. When I say that, and I was talking about during the broadcast, you got to keep your shoulders square to the line of scrimmage. Mm-hmm. And if you get turned, that means they're, you know, like you're facing the sideline.
Yeah, we saw that last week on that game-winning run for the Raiders when Puna got turned.
Puna just totally turned. So, you know, that's the thing in the run game that you just have to do. I'm trying to look at some of the other another time on a fly sweep, he sniffs inside, you know, thinking, oh, I'm going to go underneath this block, and then he gets beat to the edge. There was a couple of maybe four times where I was like, man, Bruce, that was rough. So yeah, that's kind of what went on there. There's nothing magical that's going on in the run defense. You know, it's almost on every play. There was a couple of times Pete said that Woolen played, you know, solid football, and he did. He get what, his sixth interception.
Yeah.
You know, which is amazing, but, you know, sometimes in the run game, he kind of, you know, blacks out a little bit. And
what is that? Is he wandering aimlessly, or what does that mean?
Yeah, I mean, I think he just kind of runs around like a puppy dog, which he is, and tries to, you know, make plays, and sometimes not necessarily. And the corners have to be involved. This is kind of like, you know, when you see the offensive line give up a sack, you go, oh, it's the O-line. Well, like Ray always tells us, a lot of times it's the tight end. Sometimes it's the running back. Sometimes it's the, you know, a receiver that needs to come inside and block or be ready for a hot route or whatever. The corners are involved in the run game, and that's part of it. And so a lot of times you see a guy, and I always have a tendency to kind of blame the interior seven, but for the most part, they need their corners to be, you know, heads up in the running game. And there was a couple of times where they got to the edge, and they just didn't get it done. So there was that first drive. And then, you know, after that, it was like on every single play, one guy screwed up.
Yeah.
You know who doesn't screw up, Bob?
Jordan Brooks.
He is never part of, I was talking about this on the radio last night, that he's never part of anything that I have seen. I'm sure he's made mistakes. I thought, oh, yesterday, okay, for example, he gave up an extra couple yards to a ball carrier because he didn't wrap up. He just tried to blast him, and it wasn't the hugest deal in the world, but still. But him and Cody had a pretty good, you know, pretty good game. I thought it was more on the edge. It was Bruce. It was the corners. By the way, I talked to Cody yesterday, and I'm like, dude, you got to be on cloud nine. You pick off Tom Brady in Germany. Your Utes go, and you see his little brother playing out there?
Yeah, I didn't realize it was a Barton
A third Barton, yeah.
Where's the other football. One?
The other one's in Las Vegas, plays for the Raiders.
What does he play?
He's a tackle. He looks like Cody, except blowed up.
He's an offensive tackle?
Cody.
Yeah. Defense?
No, he's offense.
Wow, I didn't realize that they were connected. Saw the name, didn't realize that was his brother.
Yeah, and then he gets the game winner.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but I don't know what happened on that final pass. Did that get tipped or something? Because he looked like he just kind of floated that up there. And
yeah, he totally did.
Receiver was like 20 yards behind Cody Barton, and so that seemed like he just kind of threw it up there.
You know, we used to always say, you know, to get an interception, just remember the quarterback's not throwing the ball to you, okay?
Yeah.
But that one, he was throwing the ball to Cody.
Yeah, he threw it right there. It was a perfect pass. Great completion.
But I'm talking to Cody and really quick, and he just starts rambling on about how he got hit in the part of his shoulder, right below your shoulder, between your bicep and your tricep, right on that bone there.
Yeah, where people would hit you with a Charlie horse.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He's like, yeah, I got hit right there, man. It's killing me. You know, this is, and he starts into this whole conversation right after I said all that stuff to him. So he wasn't really like
thinking,
hey, I'm on cloud nine. You know, he's still thinking about the game.
Right. Coming up, are there any regrets now for the Seahawks after watching Bobby Wagner yesterday? We're going to get into that next with Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports Station on 710.
Wyman and Bob.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports Station.
Well, it was a big day yesterday for a former Seahawk, and Bobby Wagner had a heck of a game out there, Dave. And it was interesting to see, because you could make the case we hadn't seen that version of him in a number of seasons. And I don't know if you agree or disagree with that, but there was a different intensity the way he was playing. And congrats to him. You know, I don't root against it. That, to me, that's the ultimate, to see a guy that you loved that played here come out and play a great game, but they still lose.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what I was pulling. I wanted Russ to have a great individual season and have the Broncos go 0-17.
Well, it's more realistic with somebody like Bobby. I mean, if you're going to root for Russ to have a really good season, they're going to win.
Well, right? Maybe the defense could just stink it up each week. But
yeah,
you know.
Yeah. Well, their defense is really good.
But Bobby with two sacks and an interception, if you want to call it that.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you just saw a different – you saw him yelling on the sidelines. It was a different version of him.
Yeah, and he also had another tackle for a loss. So he was just all over the place, man. I mean, I think he was really slippery, you know, like he's hard to block, but, you know, because he moves around so much. But I think, you know, I would have ran right at him. You know, that I think that if you could do that, because, you know, look, he can take on blocks. I mean, I remember talking to Lofa about it, and he's like, man, when he decides he's going to take a blocker on, he's really stout at the point of attack. But, you know, he the last 2-3 years, he's tried to kind of go around, you know, and that's just the way, the style of how he plays. They love him down there, man. I was talking to JB Long down there, and then we had him on the show last mm-hmm. week, and they loved, you know, his leadership, everything. And, you know, it was pretty cool. I was kind of almost
loved him.
Yeah, DeMarco loved him too. And I was watching him walk out there by himself as the lone captain, and it kind of made me sad, man. You know, I was just thinking about what he means to everybody. And then when I left and went back over by the locker room, that's where I saw Cody and everything, Bobby was walking in there. He came in, he was saying hi to everybody. I mean, you know, and he probably had to handshake. I didn't go up to him because he was shaking everybody's hand and saying, hey, how you doing? I mean, all the guys, like the security guards, the trainers, I mean, everybody loves Bobby.
Yeah.
And for good reason, just an excellent dude.
253 says Bobby made more plays yesterday than he did all of last year. and then somebody was, I can't find the text. I saw one earlier where they were basically saying, you know, I didn't see any of those tackles being made downfield, and this is just a sign that the Seahawks screwed up and it was their scheme and not Bobby. And
yeah, I wouldn't say it was their scheme. I would say it was what they allowed him to do.
Yeah.
I think that they shouldn't have allowed, you know, some of the things that he did. You know, like I remember in the San Francisco game last year, there was a fourth down play where he was going backwards. You know, he never attacked the line of scrimmage, never.
Yeah.
And there's no refuting that. I mean, if you dial up that play and look at it, it's obvious. It's true. They were tolerating that. So, you know, and I think a lot of it is you don't want Bobby going up there, I guess, and smashing into a guard and possibly getting hurt, I guess, because he's worth $18 million a year. I think that was probably part of it. But what are they? They're paying him 10 now. Mm-hmm. So, and the way I know Pro Football Focus, which is I have no idea what they're looking at, but but they, you know, he's got 5 sacks now, and that was the other thing, Bob, that bothered me is that I wished that the Seahawks in that capacity more. I think he is probably the best blitzing. Maybe Devin White is awfully good, but as far as a second level linebacker and just his instincts of where to go and everything and what move to make and when to, you know, get around a guy, all that, Bobby's one of the best. I think he's top two, him and Devin White rushing the passer.
Well, and it's amazing. 5 is his career high.
Yeah.
I mean, he had 1 all of last year. He had 3 in 20, 3 in 19. He had 1 in 2018, 1.5 in 2017. His career high was 4.5 back in 2016.
Yeah, he's the sack master, man. I'm telling you, he's got a real knack for it. And so that was why, you know, there was a few times last year where he messed up in coverage over the last couple 3 years. I mean, where he was jumping things and really trying to use his instincts more than the rules of the defense. And I thought, man, just send him. Send him, drop, you know, anybody else, but just to have Bobby, he has a great knack for trying to, you know, sort of push the pocket and decide where the hole is to get through. And, yeah, that's now 5 sacks for him. And I don't know, he's got like 4,000 tackles or something. It's ridiculous. You know, I think he made, what did he make, 6 or 7? He's got, you know, almost 100 tackles.
In this game, yeah, let's see. So far this year, he's got 97.
Yeah.
97 tackles so far this year through 12 games. So, yeah, and I would say this. We often talk to guys who go up against their former teams, whether it's, you know, somebody on this team or whether it's Bobby. I will never again believe a player who says, nah, it's just another game. Never. It yeah. clearly was not. You see him on the sidelines, and we had, who was it, Nuosu, who told us, heck yeah, it's a big deal. And he was one of the few guys who's truly been honest about it. Like, yeah, it's a big deal. I want to show them what they missed, you know. And I would say that's probably true of any player that has a competitive bone in their body, which anybody at that level does. So they can give us the lip service, Dave, and the cliches about, nah, I'm just focused on winning and being there for my team. And, you know, it's just another game on the schedule. No, it's not. No,
well,
it's not.
Guys say that in case they make a mistake or do something screwy, and then you're like, oh, he got too hyped up for his game against his former team. I don't remember thinking that way, but I think I told you that I think I got four game balls my first year in Denver. You know, they would hand them out to somebody that had a good performance. Well, two of them were against the Seahawks.
Yeah.
And Wade Phillips goes, you know, you can play hard against the other teams too.
Yeah.
Or play well. Play well. But yeah, I didn't realize it. But yeah, it's definitely a thing, man. You want to, and especially for Bobby, I mean, you know, it was kind of the other way around. Like, you know, as far as what we're sort of figuring out is that Russ wanted out. And Bobby, not necessarily. It's not like he wanted to end the relationship, I don't think. So, you know, that it's a little bit different for him. But, you know, I think that Pete and John have had those conversations with Bobby to the point where, and I thought this is another thing, just to turn it back around, you know, for the Seahawks, the fact that he's going over to their locker room and talking to all the guys on the sidelines and talking to Pete and everything just kind of indicates how the Seahawks treat players.
Yeah. Yeah.
They treat them very well.
And listen, that was a move, you know, based on how much he was making, and they had guys in the wings that they wanted to let loose, and Jordan Brooks is the heir apparent and let him do his thing. And as you pointed out, that's a guy that doesn't make mistakes. He's a very good player. And you got to see if what Cody has, and it just, you know, $18 million for what you were getting, whether that was the fault of the defense, the scheme, or whether it was his fault, what have you. Just, that's not how he was playing here. I mean, I think everybody that's watched him over the years can agree to this. Not a knock on him. Maybe it was a result of their scheme and what they allowed him to do, but that just wasn't what you were seeing here for probably the past three seasons, I would say. And people texting in saying, I love Bobby. This is 360. I love Bobby, but it's pretty sad that it took that game to get them jacked up enough to play good. I mean, how long has it been since he's had a big impact game like that? He should have played that with that intensity for us. We made him the highest paid linebacker in the league. Kind of pisses me off, says the 360.
Yeah, there were those times. There were those times, but you know, I almost feel guilty talking, you know, saying anything negative about Bobby. But you know, you had to, if I would love to sit down with some of the Pro Football Focus people and just see what in the world they're talking about.
Yeah.
You know, because sometimes there are some things that you need to do as a linebacker that don't necessarily show up in the stats, and like taking on blockers. And yeah, I had this great play of Lavonte David. And it was last year where he just entirely sacrifices himself. He's like a heat-seeking missile. He just sprints to the outside of the tackle and just dives, throws his body into the fullback so Devin White can come over and make the tackle on Alvin Kamara. It was, we kind of detailed that. I think I did a football 101 thing of that. And that's just not what Bobby was going to do.
Yeah.
He's just not going to do that. And they're the same age. They're the same year. He was drafted a few slots after Bobby, Lavonte David was. So, yeah, those are the kind of things that you never saw him do. But I think, like I said, it wasn't him. I think it was that the defense, it wasn't the scheme. It was that's what they tolerated.
Yeah.
That's what they, and almost, you know, probably told him, hey, you don't need to go out there throwing your body into a guard in the backfield. You know, we want you to, you know, do this and do that. And a lot of times he was kind of like the cleanup guy, you know, as far as tackling somebody. And that's why some of those tackles, a lot of those tackles were downfield. But, yeah, it was peculiar how they, what they, I think it was the relationship between him and Ken Norton.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was very curious.
All right, coming up, if the Mariners still want a free agent shortstop, the price has now been set. We're going to get into that next with Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports Station on 710.
Wyman and Bob.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports Station.
We got our player spotlight coming up today at 5:30. You want to tune in for that one, featuring a guy who got thrown into action that probably didn't expect to be out there. Tony Jones Jr. will join us at 5:30 today. A conversation we had this morning. Very nice kid. Very nice guy.
Yep.
Good to talk to him. So that comes up at 5:30 today. Meanwhile, we've been talking a lot about who's available out there for the Seattle Mariners. We were going city to city throughout the past week and a half, just in our hot stove hype, looking at different possibilities. And one of the One of the names we were looking at, I don't know how many people really believe there was a chance they were going to make a move on him, was Trey Turner. He is no longer available, now a member of the Philadelphia Phillies on an 11-year, $300 million deal, Dave.
Dude, he's 29.
Yeah.
11-year deal.
40 years old when it's done.
Take him to 40.
Yeah.
Goodness, I can do that radio math.
Do you think he'll still be fast at 40?
Yeah. Well, eventually his skills are going to deteriorate.
Yeah. Yeah. So you figure the back end.
Just like
end
Tom Brady.
You figure the back end of that deal may look a bit like Albert Pujols in his deal, where the average goes down. He never had speed. But just physically, you're a little more fragile. Maybe you're not as available. We'll see what it looks like for him. But I'll say this. As much as you look at it right now, Dave, and go, my goodness, at the 11 years, he's going to be 40. That money 5 years from now may look pretty meager in baseball terms, the way the salaries are going up. So by the time he's, you know, in years 7 or 8, yeah, he's still making a fat chunk of change. But what's it going to be in comparison to what other guys are making at that point? Maybe it won't seem so outrageous, I guess, is my point, based on the way these salaries are being inflated.
Do you think this is a, because we always talk to Alombre about this, and he says, baseball's very regional. It's not national. You think this is a good sign, the amount of money and the way these contracts are going up and up and up for just the health of baseball in general?
Yeah, because these guys are in this business to make money. That's the bottom line. These owners are not there to lose money and do a service to the community. And if that's a side effect to it, great. But their bottom line is green, and they want to make money. You're not spending this kind of money as an owner if you don't anticipate making it back. And you're already making money, whether it's the revenue sharing, whether it's the TV deals that are in place, whether it's everything they've got going there with their attendance and ticket sales and concessions and merchandise. There's a lot of money. It is still regional, but you see so many markets that spend crazy money. They don't do that to lose money. They're not doing that with the idea, well, hopefully we'll break even. That's not how it works. So, yeah, to answer your question, I think, it speaks to the health of the game now. Does that mean, you know, more people are going to tune in to watch the Phillies than ever before? I don't know what kind of impact his presence will have, but it's, you know, financially, it's in good shape.
Well, and then, you know, when you see this with Trey Turner, and, you know, we've gone around, we talked to Andy, Andy Bernard from The Office.
Yeah.
Andy Bunker, you know, Dansby Swanson, there's zero chance that he's leaving Atlanta. I'm sorry. The guy's born in Marietta. I mean, he's a hometown guy. Trey Turner gets signed for what was it? $27 million a year over 11 years, a little bit over that. And I don't know. I just don't see the Mariners doing that. I don't see them signing some big, I feel like they might do something to maybe get some depth or whatever, but I don't know. I just think this is too rich for their blood here as far as these contracts are going right now. Well, it's kind of discouraging to see Trey Turner get that much money.
Yeah, because it makes you wonder, all right, well, what does Carlos Correa get? What does Xander Bogaerts
get?
And Aaron Judge has yet to sign, so we'll see what those numbers look like. But Justin Hollander, the GM of this team, talking about the fact that they still need to find a piece for the outfield.
I think we definitely want to be opportunistic in the marketplace right now, whether that's free agency or trade, to add more offense to our team if it's available. So that is something we're looking at. You know, corner outfield is a spot where we feel like we could add another bat having just subtracted a bat. It's definitely something we're looking at. And as we get into San Diego, I'm sure we'll be talking about hundreds of different ways we can add to the position. We have DH days, we have corner outfield days available. So that's something we'll continue to look at.
They're going to look at it, Bob.
They're going to look at it. Well, I'm glad they recognize there's a need that needs to be filled. One player that is potentially available, not technically, they're not a free agent, but Reynolds from Pittsburgh has made it clear he'd like to play elsewhere, which I can't blame him because the Pirates are a disastrous organization who, anytime a player is in a position to make real money, tends to be shipped off. So I think I saw that in his 4 years there, they've won at a 386 clip, 386 win percentage. I mean, it's just, they're terrible. They're just a non-competitive franchise, and he'd like to leave there. Now, question is, he's under their control. They don't have to trade him. They don't have to give in to, you know, a trade demand if they don't want to. But they could probably get a pretty nice package in return for him, because he's a guy who, you know, is a very, by all accounts, and we're not watching a lot of Pirates games out here, but by all accounts, a very good defensive player. He's a center fielder.
I was going
to
say.
He's 27 years old. He's a switch hitter who seems to hit pretty, he's pretty comparable on both sides of the plate. So he's exactly what you'd want here. I would love to see them go after him, but I don't know what the asking price is going to be. Is it going to be too rich? They're, you know, having talked about their financial constraints they place on themselves, leads you to believe you're not going to send them Marco and send them Kelnick or send them guys that are making major league money. Maybe it's going to be a prospect-rich package, perhaps, is what I would assume they would want. Something along those lines.
Well, I'm looking at his age, 28 years old, and it looks like he's...
next month, yeah. It'll be
according to Spotrac, that he's got a two-year, $13 million deal. So he got paid $6.75 last year, and that's what's due next year.
Yeah,
his contract. So that's not a big problem. But yeah, what are you giving up? And that's what I've been really kind of happy about. I mean, you did give up Toro, okay, but I don't think anybody's going to get too bent out of shape over that. You definitely
nobody is
not going to miss Jesse Winker.
No,
and then you know you had Swanson and the prospect that were given up for Teoscar Hernandez. So far that part's been pretty that's been easy to take. You know, because here you have a farm system that Jerry built up for a number of years, and you're worried about trading away all those prospects and all of that. But, you know, that's what it's there for, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I always think of it as being, okay, these are going to be the next, you know, players for the Mariners, but it's also for trades like this. So you can get a player that you know is going to be, that's done it, you know.
Yeah.
He's not a prospect.
Well, we'll find out more tomorrow. We'll talk more about Brian Reynolds. Jason Mackey, Pirates beat writer, will join us tomorrow. So we'll get an idea from him about just what kind of guy he is. We can see the numbers, but maybe talk about if they've got an idea of what the asking price may be in exchange for him and how realistic is it that he'd actually be traded. We'll get into all that tomorrow. Meanwhile, are the Seahawks now the favorites in the NFC West? We'll break down everything that happened on a wild day in the NFL. That is coming up with Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports Station on 710.